sahanavavatu, sahanau bhunaktu, sahaviryan karavavahai, tejasvinavadhitamastu mavidvishavahai. Om shanti, shanti, shanti. Oh my good, welcome back. We'll continue our study of chapter 14. Get that up here. Excuse me. We'll begin with recitation, beginning with verse 9. Repeat after me, please. Excuse me. Sattvam sukhe sanjayati, sattvam sukhe raja karmani bharata, raja karma jnanam avritya tu tamaha, jnanam avritya pramade sanjayatyuta, pramade sanjayatyuta Rajas tamas cha bibhuya, rajas tamas cha satvam bhavati bharata, satvam bhavati rajas satvam tamas chaiva, rajas satvam tamas tamas satvam rajas tata, tamas satvam rajas sarvadvareshu dehesmin, sarvadvareshu Prakashahupa jayate, prakashahupa jnanam yada tada vidyad, jnanam tada vivriddham satvam ityuta, vivriddham satvam lobhah pravrtirarambaha, lobhah pravrtira karmanam ashamaspraha, karmanam Rajasyetani jayante, rajasyeta vivriddhe bharatarshabha, vivriddhe aprakasho pravrittischa, aprakasho pramado moha hevacha, pramado moha tamasyetani jayante, tamasyeta Vivriddhe kuru nandana, vivriddhe kuru Yada sattve pravriddhe tu, yada sattve Pralayam yati dehabrata, pralayam yati Tarottamavidan lokan, tarottamavidan Amalan pratipadyate, amalan pratipadyate Rajasi pralayam gatva, rajasi pralayam karma sangishu jayate, karma sangishu tata pralinas tamasi, tata pralinas mudhayonishu jayate, mudhayonishu karmana sukritas yahuhu, karmana sukritas Sattvikam nirmalam phalam, sattvikam nirmalam Rajasastu phalam dukkham, rajasastu phalam Ajnanam tamasah phalam, ajnanam tamasah Sattvat sanjayate jnanam, sattvat sanjayate Rajaso lobha hevacha, rajaso lobha Pramada mohau tamaso, pramada mohau Bhavato jnanam evacha, bhavato jnanam Urdhvam gacchanti sattvastha, urdhvam gacchanti sattvastha Madhyetishthanti rajasaha, madhyetishthanti Chaganya gunavrittistha Jaganya guna vritti adho gacchanti tamasaha adho gacchanti. Very good. All right. Let's see. We'll review 10 and proceed. This chapter, as you know, is primarily devoted to an analysis. I was about to say an analysis of the three gunas, but that's really not true. We're dealing with the three gunas, sattva, rajas, tamas, throughout this chapter. But the subject matter is not the three gunas. The subject matter is your mind. Your mind being characterized by the relative balance of these three gunas. As we said when we started the chapter, it really is a chapter on psychology. And it has some very profound psychological insights. We'll see a lot of that today. So, in our last class, we talked about the relative, I guess prevalence would be the word, of the three gunas, sattva, rajas, tamas. You already know the meaning of the three words, so, and also the nature of sattva, rajas, tamas will be further unfolded in the coming verses. But what we saw was our psychological makeup could be described in terms of which of these three gunas predominates. That's what we saw in verse 10. We saw that for some people, sattva guna predominates. And then what would be the manifestation of sattva guna in that person's thinking and in that person's behavior? Well, we got a pretty good insight as to that, that a person whose thinking and behavior is predominantly sattvika, that person will be good, kind, gentle, and knowledgeable, and we'll see a lot more description as we continue. A person whose predominant psychological character is that of rajas, we would expect someone who is very extrovert, very passionate, very intense, etc. And that has both benefits and negative consequences, both, right? And we'll see that as we continue to talk about sattva, rajas. We could say that sattva has only good consequences, except, remember, we saw that even sattva causes bondage. Remember that verse? Causes bondage by attachment to always being in a happy mood or attachment to gaining knowledge, etc. But from a psychological standpoint, now that's with regard to bondage, with regard to moksha. Even sattva can be a problem, and as we'll discuss, I think, in the next class, the ultimate goal is to transcend the gunas. But to transcend the gunas is from the standpoint of moksha. Suppose we step down from that point and talk about psychology. Instead of talking about moksha, we're talking about psychology. From a psychological standpoint, sattva is good, beneficial in all situations. From a psychological standpoint, rajas could be helpful, could be unhelpful. All depends, and we'll see that as we continue. Tamas, on the other hand, in all situations is unhelpful, and we'll see that described in more detail. So a person whose psychological makeup is primarily sattvika, that'll be a person who is very much blessed with a good mind. A person whose psychological makeup is dominated by rajo guna, by the guna of rajas. We can imagine the nature of that person's behavior and thinking. And then a person whose mind is dominated by tamas, they're still in bed. They haven't woken up yet. It's not noon yet. Anyway, that's kind of the idea. Now, before we pick up the thread, let's make sure that we have the right attitude as we're studying this chapter. You know, it's possible to pick up a book on psychology and start reading it and find it to be the most dry, boring, ridiculous material ever, unless you read it with a particular orientation, that book is talking about not a mind, but it's talking about your mind. That there's a difference in orientation. So as we continue our study of chapter 14, let's make sure that we have the proper orientation. We're not inquiring into the nature of a mind in general. Who cares? I mean, we're not trying to be psychologists, and we're not interested in psychology per se. What we are interested in is our own individual spiritual growth, and spiritual growth is definitely dependent on the condition of your mind. So from that perspective, as we study these verses, what I'm hoping you're going to be doing is applying these teachings, using these teachings to inquire into your own mental condition, to understand how is sattva guna manifest in your mind? How does it become manifest in your behavior, in your thinking? Similarly for rajoguna, how is rajas present in your mind? How is rajas manifest in your thinking and behavior? And tamas, how is tamas present? To what extent and in what situations is tamas present in your mind? How is it manifest in your behavior and thinking? And this leads to an observation I've made several times, but I haven't made this for a long time, so let me make it very clearly now. One of the crucial spiritual practices that is not often enunciated in very simple, direct terms, one of the most important and crucial spiritual practices is what, actually, it's talked about all the time, but in different terms. Let me just say it very simply. The spiritual practice that I consider most crucial is self-observation. And by self-observation, we don't mean looking at yourself in a mirror. Sorry for making a stupid joke. But we're talking about observing your mind, observing your behavior. To observe your thinking, your moods, your behavior, this is the kind of self-observation that is absolutely crucial. How will you undergo a process of growth, emotional growth and spiritual growth, unless you're not attentive to the nature of your own mind? Now, when I express it in these terms, to be focused on self-observation, you may think, Swamiji, that sounds like such a modern psychological term. Here we're studying this ancient Vedantic tradition. Why didn't they use that terminology in ancient times? They did. They used a term that's so commonly used in Vedanta, but we sometimes forget what the term means. The term in Vedanta is Atma Vichara. Atma Vichara means what? Self-inquiry. Self-inquiry, self-observation. Atma Vichara is perhaps the term that best describes what Vedanta is in general. Vedanta is Atma Vichara. Problem is that we narrowly define Atma. Atma is Satchidananda Atma, so therefore Atma Vichara is inquiry into one's true nature as Satchidananda Atma. All of that is true, but the meaning of Atma in that expression is much wider. Atma Vichara does not merely mean inquiry into your true nature. It includes inquiry into whatever you call I. Atma means you. Atma means self. The literal meaning of Atma is self, not Satchidananda. Satchidananda is a more technical Vedantic understanding, but in general, Atma means self, and self at all of its levels. So if we understand Vedanta as Atma Vichara definitely requires inquiry into your true nature, but Atma Vichara equally requires inquiry into your mind, your thinking, your behavior. Absolutely essential. And why is it essential? No observation, no growth. No self-observation equals no growth. Here's a metaphor. I want to give a nice introduction, then we'll see a lot of verses, but the introduction, I think, will be very important. By the way, later I have an amazing quotation to share with you. This one will knock your, what is the expression? Knock your shoes off? Is that the expression? Socks. Is that really not knock your socks off? Okay. We'll get to that a little later in the class. Suppose you cook meals regularly, and suppose the quality of your food is kind of hit and miss, not very good. And by the way, most of you are very good cooks. Imagine me in the kitchen. Gosh, big trouble, huge trouble. Anyway, here's the point. Suppose you are cooking a lot and would like to improve your cooking. What is the best way to improve your cooking? What is the essential way to improve your cooking? Buy more cookbooks? You already have 25 cookbooks. Another 25 cookbooks is not going to improve your cooking, right? What is crucial for improving your cooking? Would it not be to taste the and to taste very carefully, to taste with a real sense of inquiry? So by observing the quality of your food, then is it very complicated to figure out how to be better? This is a surprising thing. You might think of it in two stages. One is observation. Second is making corrections. And if somebody says your food is lousy, you have to improve the quality of your food, you might say, oh, I don't know what to do. But if you taste very critically, very carefully your food, tasting it, you'll know what's wrong. Knowing what's wrong, how complicated is it to make the necessary corrections? It's not very complicated. If you taste what's wrong, and I'm not trying to suggest that cooking is easy. I don't know anything about cooking. But one thing I know is this principle of how we improve in life. The key to improvement is not technique. The key to improvement is observation. When you observe very accurately, very critically, and discover what's wrong, figuring out what to do to correct it is the easy part. The observation is the crucial factor. So as we proceed through this text, we're engaging now in that same process of self-reflection, self-observation, atma-vichara. It has to be done when I say very critically, I don't mean with criticism. You know, self-criticism is not helpful. Let's just make this point very clear. To go on, to taste your food and say, oh, that's awful, I'm a terrible cook, I'm never going to cook again, that's not very helpful, right? So this sense of being highly self-critical, in a sense of putting yourself down, is absolutely undesirable. Always, in all situations, to put yourself down in any way at all is never helpful. Sometimes people say, oh, Swamiji, it helps me come up. I doubt it. I think it pulls you down emotionally. You can come up in different ways. So when I say to examine yourself very critically, I don't mean that you should say, oh, I'm no good, I'm no good at this, I'm no good at that. Please, that is harmful, it is undesirable. Please don't do that. So what we do mean by being by observing your own behavior and thinking, by being very critical as in critical thinking, means to see very objectively, to see very precisely, to see deeply and thoroughly. So that's what we're talking about. So just to wrap up this introduction before we plunge in, we'll see a series of verses now. But I'd like to say kind of a bold statement, and you may have heard me say this several years ago. The one spiritual practice that can transform your life to such an extent that you'll be amazed is based on self-observation. This, in my opinion, is the most powerful spiritual practice. What is that powerful spiritual practice? Begins with self-observation, but with one more step. For whatever you do, or whatever thought arises, or whatever behavior arises, step one is to observe. Step two is to find out where it came from, to seek out its root, to seek out the source of that form of thinking, to seek out the source of the mood or emotion, to seek out the root of the behavior, to find out the motivation. For whatever you do, whatever you think, whatever you're engaged in, to ask yourself, where did that come from? This is not a very complex practice. What it requires is anything you do, you have to say, why did I do that? Whatever thought comes in your mind, you have to say, why did that thought come into my mind? Whatever mood or emotion is present in your mind, you ask yourself, where did that mood come from? Why do I feel like this? This practice is very simple to describe, but the practice of to practice it is something amazing. It's challenging, but it's absolutely transformative. To go to the root of all of your behaviors, your thinking, your emotions, you will learn so much about yourself. Contrarywise, to fail to observe yourself, to fail to inquire into where did that behavior come from, why do I feel like that, to ignore that kind of practice means, how will you grow? You know, we say again and again, we learn from our mistakes, well, only when we make an attempt to learn from them, which means you have to analyze the mistake, you have to understand, why did I do that, how did that happen? Only through that process of self-observation, of self-inquiry, only then do we actually grow from our mistakes. So here's the practice, and this practice is really supported by the rest of this chapter. To first observe our behavior, observe what we say, and most importantly, to observe what goes on in our minds, to observe our thoughts, to observe our emotions, our moods, and not just observe. Observation comes first, but to take it that crucial step further to ask why. Where did that come from? Where did that behavior come from? Where did that emotion come from? Why am I thinking this particular thing? To perform that kind of inquiry is absolutely self-transformative, incredibly powerful technique, and this chapter empowers you to do that kind of inquiry, that kind of atma-vichara, self-inquiry, and then to look into the motivation. Okay, enough introduction. Let us proceed. Sarvadvareshu dehesmin sarvadvareshu prakashahupajayate prakashahupajayate jnanam yadatada vidyad jnanam tada vivriddham satvamityuta vivriddham satvamityuta. All right. So what are we observing? What should we look for? And here Sri Krishna says, Asmin dehe, in this body, sarva dwareshu, in all of the dwaras, all of the doorways, portals, in all of the portals of your body. What are the portals of your body? You got two of them here, they're called eyes. Two of them here, ears, nostrils, etc., refers to the gateways of our body. Also refers to our five senses, sight, hearing, taste, smell, and touch are also those dwaras. So what happens? In all of these portals or doorways in the body, what happens? prakashaha upajayate. Prakasha, light. Upajayate, arises. Light arises means what? You're going to, light beams are going to come out of your eyes and ears. What does that mean? Light arises. Prakashaha, and then you have to pick up the word in the next line, jnanam. What kind of prakasha, what kind of light? The light of knowledge. So, in all of your sense organs, the light of knowledge, upajayate, arises. We'll talk about that more. Let's see the rest of the verse. In all of your senses, the light of knowledge arises, yada, yada, when. When in all of your senses, the light of knowledge arises, tada, then, vidyat, then you should understand. What should you understand? What? Satyam iti vivridham. Sattva, sattva guna, vivridham is increased. Vivridham means increased, developed. Vidyat, you should understand that sattva guna has become developed when you see in all of your senses, when you see the light of knowledge. Now, the language is a little obscure, I admit. Let's understand what Sri Krishna wants us to understand here. How to know when sattva guna is on the increase, which is what we would like to bring about? Well, we observe our behavior. So suppose you observe the behavior of your senses. By the way, your senses are actually six in number, traditionally understood. The sense organ we call karana. Karana means sense organ. Obviously, sight, hearing, taste, touch, and smell are five karanas. But there's one more karana, which is inside, which is why it's called antakarana. The antakarana, the inner, literally means inner sense, refers to your mind. And we have to include that. Suppose you observe your senses and your mind to see how they function, what are they attracted to. And suppose you discover jnanam, what does it say? Prakashaha jnanam. Suppose you discover the light of knowledge in your mind and senses. In your senses means your senses are attracted to good things. And when that light of knowledge is in your mind, it means your mind is attracted to good things. So when your senses and mind are attracted to good things, tada, then, vidyat, you should understand, Sri Krishna tells us, you should understand that sattvam iti, sattva guna, is vivridham, is increased, is developed. So here's step one, not step one, but very specific advice about self-observation. What is it? What is your mind and senses attracted to? If they're attracted to good things, good. That's sattva guna. That's showing you you're on the right track. That is the path for the development of sattva guna. What about rajas? We'll see in the next verse. Lobha pravrittirarambha, lobha pravrittira, karma nama shama spraha, karma nama shama, rajasyetani jayante, rajasyetani. Vivriddhe bharatarshabha, vivriddhe. In the second half, rajasi, vivriddhe bharatarshabha. Bharatarshabha, O Arjuna, O bull of India, bharatarshabha. Rajasi vivriddhe, vivriddha, we said before, increased. Rajasi vivriddhe, when rajas is increased, when rajas is developing in your mind, what are its signs? What shall we look for? What shall we observe? Rajasi vridhe, when rajas is increased. What will we observe? We'll observe lobha, greed. That thirst, that acquisitiveness, that's a good word, that acquisitiveness. And that acquisitiveness is not merely stuck inside, it's expressed through pravritti, your activities. So your activity, your engagement in life will be to acquire things more and more and more. And there will be the arambaha karmanam. There will be the arambaha, the initiation karmanam of all kinds of activities and actions driven by lobha, driven by greed, driven by desire. Also, there is ashamaha. Shamaha means peace, inner peace. Shama means inner peace. Ashama, the opposite of inner peace. The opposite of inner peace is inner turmoil. Why would there be inner turmoil? Because you're constantly engaged in getting, what do they call it? They call it the American way. What is the American way? More. More, more, more. That's the American way. If some is good, more is better. Right? It's the common sense. It's ridiculous, but we'll talk about that later. So, ashamaha, absence of peace, and spriha. Spriha is a nice word to describe the sense of longing, this deep-seated sense that whatever I have and whoever I am right now is I'm not good enough, I don't have enough, it's not okay, I have to do more, I have to get more, I have to acquire more, I have to accomplish more, etc., etc., etc. Wow. Rajasi vivridhe. This is very apparent when rajas is developed. So Sri Krishna paints a very clear picture here. And we see this in people who become, you know, of course, this is present in everyone to some extent. By the way, it's worth pointing out that there's no one, no living human being who is without all three of these gunas. The most saintly human being will still have a little rajas and tamas. The most extrovert human being, the most greedy extrovert human being, rajas, will still have some sattva and tamas. Maybe not much, but it'll still be there. And the most lethargic human being will still have a little bit of sattva and rajas. So please don't think that somebody can be only sattvika or only rajasa. There's no such thing. So we're all combinations of the three. But we see plenty of examples of the extreme expression of rajas. We see that in situations like somebody who's a workaholic. We see that in ordinary people, but we see it in an extreme case. Extreme cases of workaholism. Also, it's worth noticing, that this extreme extroversion and activity, sometimes we think, well, wait a minute, isn't being really active and engaged a good thing? You accomplish more. Here comes our quote of American thinking again, more, 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 more. So we come to think that doing more, accomplishing more, is invariably good. And let's be very clear about this. To imagine that merely by doing more and accomplishing more that you are fulfilling the goal of life is so incredibly naive. You know this, and we don't need to make a big deal of this right now, but you know how one can accomplish great, great things in life. One can gain tremendous wealth and power in life. And in spite of those great accomplishments and great acquisitions, one can still be incredibly miserable. You know that. You know that mere acquisition and mere accomplishment is no guarantee of happiness, of peace, of love, of a really good life. So let's be absolutely clear on this fact that mere acquisition and accomplishment, which means the raw expression of rajas, is not helpful. If it's properly channeled, it can be helpful. But if it's just the raw, unrestrained expression of rajas, it's not in and of itself helpful. Okay, enough said. Then, what about tamas? Aprakasho pravittischa, aprakasho pravrittischa, pramado moha hevacha, pramado moha. Tamas yetani jayante, tamas yetani. Vivriddhe kuru nandana, vivriddhe kuru. Look at the second half. Tamasi etani jayante vivriddhe. Kuru nandana, O Arjuna, kuru nandana. O Arjuna, tamasi vivriddhe. Prior verse, rajasi vivriddhe, when rajas is increased. This verse, tamasi, you have to break the words apart. Tamasi etani. Tamasi etani. Tamasi vivriddhe, when tamas is increased, then etani jayante, then these take place. These occur. Just as in the prior verse, I didn't explain those words. In the prior verse, it says, rajasi vivriddhe, when rajas increases, etani jayante, these occur, these are born, these arise. What are these? Lobha pravrittihi, arambha karmanam, ashamaha, and spraha. Etani jayante, these arise, rajasi vivriddhe, when rajas is predominant. Now, tamasi vivriddhe, when tamas is predominant, etani jayante, these arise. What are these that arise when tamas is predominant? Aprakashaha. Two verses, we had prakashaha, meaning jnanam, the light of knowledge. So if prakasha is the light of knowledge, aprakasha is what? Don't say the light of ignorance. What does that mean, the light of ignorance? Yeah, light of knowledge, light of ignorance. Light of ignorance would be a flashlight that throws a black beam. No such thing. All right. It means the absence of light, the absence of knowledge. Absence of light, absence of knowledge means what? Ignorance. The main quality of tamas is ignorance. Tamas, one of the meanings of tamas is dark, darkness. So this darkness representing ignorance. So aprakashaha, the darkness of ignorance, is one of the characteristics of tamas. Also, apravritti. When you're talking about rajas, we said pravritti, action. Here, apravritti, absence of action. Just in English, lethargy, laziness, just not doing anything, not getting out of bed in the morning. Worse, pramadaha. Pramada has several meanings. Would include making mistakes, making blunders. So if you're not guided by knowledge and wisdom, you're more likely to make mistakes. And those mistakes we can call pramada. Also negligence, carelessness, neglect. You know, when people just don't care, or some of you use this term, chalta hai, that sense that it doesn't make any difference, so let it be. That kind of attitude of neglect, that attitude of indifference. So pramada can mean that attitude of indifference, which is tamas, right? That attitude of indifference is tamas. And finally, moha. Mohaha. It is confusion, delusion. It's the result of ignorance. if you are ignorant, if you're not guided by wisdom, what is present in your mind is wrong thinking, confusion, delusion, etc., moha. So these occur, this aprakashaha, this darkness, absence of knowledge, apravrittihi, absence of activity, laziness, apramadaha, negligence or error, and moha, confusion and wrong thinking, etani jayante, all of these arise when tamasi vivriddhe, when tamas is increased. These three verses have given us a roadmap for that self-observation we spoke about before, that self-inquiry. Now, I have this wonderful quotation to share with you. This amazed me. I just saw this, by the way, today, earlier today. This is just a little tidbit from the news. 40 years ago, I think today or yesterday, Richard Nixon resigned the presidency after this Watergate scandal. And if you've ever done any inquiry into the nature of Richard Nixon and his life, there's a lot of really unpleasant, undesirable stuff. Anyway, I don't want to go into a big critique of him, but here's what I really want to share with you. I happened to see a segment of an interview. Nixon was interviewed by Tom Brokaw in 1988, which is like 15 years after Watergate. So 15 years after he resigns, he's being interviewed by this well-known news figure, and this Tom Brokaw. And Brokaw asks Richard Nixon, he says, what would you have done different in your life? If you look at yourself, and I'll give you Nixon's exact quotation, but Brokaw's terms, I have to paraphrase. So the question went something like this. When you look at yourself, what would you change? Would you change the way you treated people? What would you change about yourself? When you look at your history, when you look at your life, what about yourself would you have changed? That's a paraphrase. Here's an exact quotation. This is Nixon's response. I don't go in for this psycho stuff. This psychoanalysis stuff. And to paraphrase Nixon, I don't go in for this self-observation stuff. That was what he said. He said, I don't go much for this psycho. And he went to this psycho. He blabbered a little bit at that point. Anyway, I don't go in for this psychoanalysis. I don't go in for this self-observation. He went on to say, exact quotation, I wrote it down. As far as sitting down and psychoanalyzing myself and saying, how could I have been a better person? Well, that's not my bag. Not my bag is kind of 1970s talk. Not my bag, it's not my thing. It's not something I choose to do. It's not something I'm inclined to do. So now with that in mind, he says, as far as sitting down and psychoanalyzing myself and saying, how could I have been a better person? That's not for me, Richard Nixon said. Wow. Now, most of you, not all of you, but most of you know that what he did during that Watergate scandal was terrible. He lied to the American public again and again and again in an attempt to cover up what had happened. And as you know, there were all these tapes made of his conversations, and what the tapes revealed is someone who had really corrupt morals. Somebody whose ethics were highly compromised. Now, here's the topic. How could someone have such corrupt ethics, corrupt morals, and be the leader of this country? How could the two things go together? How could Nixon have come up through the political ranks and be elected president of this country and re-elected president? He was elected and then re-elected president of this country. How do we account for his compromised ethics, his corrupted sense of morals? And when I say corrupt, I don't want to get off on a big political thing, but he was infamous for what we now call these political tricks. If he wanted, one expression, one of his tapes said, and I apologize for the crude language, he said to one of his aides, "How can we screw them?" He said that. That was how he worked. That was how he thought. How could that go on in his mind, even though he has this position as president? Well, he explained very nicely to Tom Brokaw. He says, "I don't go much for this. I don't go in for this self-observation stuff. It's not for me." What was that? As far as sitting down and psychoanalyzing myself and saying, "How could I have been a better person?" I don't do that. Well, what are the consequences of his strategy? His strategy was one of non-self-observation. That was his, he had a philosophy of life, apparently, you know, from these comments, we get the idea that his philosophy of life was, don't think about yourself. Don't analyze yourself. Don't question yourself. Don't second-guess yourself. Don't psychoanalyze yourself. That was his position. And what do we see manifest in his life as a result? This, to me, is powerful, powerful evidence for the necessity of what we're talking about, and that is a life of self-observation, as we said in the introduction. Spiritual and emotional growth depend on self-observation. In the absence of self-observation, you will not see that spiritual and emotional growth. And I guess in the person of Richard Nixon, we see a very sad example of the consequence of not undergoing self-observation. Okay, enough. Let's see some more verses. So consequences. The consequence of these three gunas, the results of these three gunas, is going to be both in this life and next life also, right? Is that what we see? Yeah. So how will these gunas affect you in this life? And how will they affect you in the next life? So that's also included in our discussion. We'll proceed. Verse 14. Yada sattve pravriddhetu. Yada sattve pravriddhetu. Pralayam yati dehabrata. Pralayam yati. Tarottamavidan lokan. Tarottamavidan. Amalan pratipadyate. Amalan pratipadyate. Yada, when sattva pravriddhe, when sattva guna is predominant, when sattva guna has grown very strong, yada, when, yada, dehabrut, an embodied person, a living person, when that person pralayam yati, when that person dies, literally undergoes dissolution, pralayam yati, but it simply means dies. So when the person dies for whom sattva guna has been cultivated and cultivated throughout one's whole life. I mean, don't imagine, none of you would imagine this, but somebody might. They say, "Well, I can live any way I want as long as before I die, I'm going to purify my mind." so that at least at the time of death, I have a pure mind for the sake of having a better rebirth. And this, of course, is just silliness, because a condition of your mind at the end of your life is a result of how you've lived your whole life. So, if somebody has lived their whole life and cultivated sattva-guna, and then pralayam-yati, and then they die, tada, then uttama-vedan lokan amalan pratipadyate. Tada, then pratipadyate, that person attains. Attains what? Lokan, realms, heavenly realms. Realms of whom? Uttama-vedan, the realms inhabited by the wise ones, Uttamavit, the heavenly realms inhabited by the wise ones, realms which are amalan, which are pure, which are saintly, which are holy. Pratipadyate, one attains pralayam yati, at the end of one's life. So, if you cultivate sattva guna throughout your life, it will bless you not only in this life, it will bless you in the next life. What about rajas? Rajasi pralayam gatva, rajasi pralayam, karma sangishu jayate, karma sangishu, tata pralinas tamasi, tata pralinas, mudha yonishu jayate, mudha yonishu jayate. Rajasi pralayam gatva. You have to pick up that word pravriddhe from the prior verse. You have to bring that into this verse. Rajasi pravriddhe. When rajas is predominant in a person's mind, and pralayam gatva, and that person undergoes death, that person dies when rajas is predominant, which means what? The whole life has been permeated with this rajoguna, with rajas, then what? Jayate, the person will be born, which means person will be reborn. Reborn how? Karma sangishu. Will be reborn amongst those who are karma sangi. Karma sangi means attached to action. Karma sangi, karma sangishu, amongst those into a family of those attached to action, jayate, this person will be reborn. What's being described here is a principle we understand as samskara. We're talking about rebirth, and we generally say that rebirth is a result of your karma. Yes, but there's another part, and that is, it's not merely your karma that determines the condition of your rebirth. In addition to karma, there's another factor. That other factor is called samskara. Samskara refers to impressions left on your mind, on your subtle body. When in somebody's life there are very intense activities, those very intense activities leave their mark on the person's mind, on the person's subtle body, in such a way that in the immediate succeeding life, we can see evidence of those samskaras from the prior life. So samskara is a mechanism through which the activities of one's life will be carried over into the immediate next life. Notice that the doctrine of karma is very different. The doctrine of karma says, according to all your prior lives, certain things can contribute to your next life. So that's not a connection between two successive lives. The doctrine of karma works for this whole cycle of lives, a whole train of lives. But samskara means, how does your prior life affect your next life? And what this verse says, the prior verse said that this verse says that if your life was extremely dominated by rajas, that will affect your next life. How will it affect your next life? You'll be born right back in the same situation. You'll be born into a situation that allows for the further expression of that rajoguna, of that raja. So it says here, you'll be born into a family who is attached to action, karma sangishu. What about tamas? Tata, in the same way, pralinaha tamasi, in the same way, if there is pralina, when there is death, tamasi, when tamas is prevalent, when tamas has been increased, when tamas is increased, if you die, then what? Jayate, one gets reborn into mudha yoni shu. Mudha yoni means a womb which is mudha. Mudha means deluded or confused. It means a womb where there's no intelligence. It means a non-human womb. It really means, it suggests, an animal womb, or what the example we've given before, cockroach. To be reborn as an animal, to be reborn as a cockroach, is then the result of this tamas. And this is not the result of karma. This is a result of samskara. Okay, we'll see just a little more. These verses will go quickly. Karmana sukratasya huhu, karmana sukratasya. Sattvikam nirmalam palam, sattvikam nirmalam. Rajasas tupalam duhkam, rajasas tupalam. Ajnanam tamasah palam, ajnanam. Good. And this verse summarizes what we've just seen in the last two, three verses. And it shows the consequence of the gunas we cultivate. And we do cultivate them, right? Let's make this point very clearly. We'll wrap up our class in a moment, but let's make sure that this is absolutely clear. The condition of your mind depends on what? And there's a tendency we have, or a tendency some people have, oh, I'm like this because of the way I was raised, because of my parents, because of my family, because of my work, I'm like this because of this and that and the other thing. There's no doubt that all of those factors affect you. Absolutely, all of those factors affect you. But still, the one who's ultimately responsible for the condition of your mind is you. You can't say, oh, I'm like this because, yes, you're like this for so many reasons, but why have you not changed yourself? Definitely there are so many factors that have caused whatever problems that you might be facing. Those factors are real. The factors of family are real. The factors of work and etc., all the problems of life, those are all real and legitimate. They affect every single person. But in spite of all those forces and influences on your life, you always have free will. You always are empowered to respond to the situations that you confront in any way you choose. Suppose the forces in life have made you with a very quick temper. Suppose you say, oh, I have a quick temper because of this, I have a quick temper because of that. You can list five different factors that have contributed to your short fuse. All five are real. All five are true. All five are legitimate. But you still have the power to catch yourself before your temper carries you away into a reaction. In spite of those five factors, you still have free will. You can still choose to control yourself. So the point is that whatever factors have conditioned your mind, all of those factors are real and true. But none of those factors have deprived you of your free will. Which means, whatever is a condition of your mind, you have control over how you guide the mind from this moment forward. We have no control over the past, right? We have no control over how our minds, how we have arrived at the present moment. We have no control over the past. We have complete freedom in how we respond to the current situation and how we move forward into the future. This is powerful. This is why, and we'll see this verse, by the way, in our next class. I won't go into it more, but just a closing thought here. It would be a mistake in this process of self-inquiry to analyze ourselves and come up with a fairly negative assessment, oh, I have all these problems. And as I said, we may have all those problems. Problems are a fact. The fact is that our bodies have certain problems, illnesses and weaknesses. It's equally a fact that our minds and emotions have certain problems, weaknesses, and defects. Both are facts. But what is equally a fact is, regardless of the condition of our body and mind, we have full freedom to respond in the present moment in a way that improves the quality of our mind. And bodies and situations. Whatever is this, in every moment we have free will. And in every moment that free will can be directed for our improvement or deprovement is not a word. I don't know. we can use our free will to lift ourselves up, or we cannot use our free will and allow ourselves to sink lower. Every moment we are empowered in that way. It's in our hands. So there's absolutely no room for saying, this is just the way I am. There's no room for that. I mean, the fact that this is the way I am, but right now I have full responsibility for what I'm going to do in the next 2 seconds, right? No matter how I am fully empowered in terms of how I respond right now. That's the power of free will. This is Bhagavan's blessing to us all. Okay, we'll continue our text in the next class. Some announcements. Tomorrow, Sunday, we'll have a satsang. We have a question-answer format. Satsang 6:15. The weather has been delightful, so please join us. We'll be sitting outside 6:15 tomorrow. A week from today, as you know, we're celebrating Janmashtami, which means the normal meditation and Gita programs will not be held. Instead, please come at 11 a.m. At 11 o'clock, we'll have some nice puja and chanting. I have a nice topic that we'll share with you next week. Also, we'll be having prasad together after the program. If you're coming, there's a sign-up sheet over on the counter. You can sign up to bring a dish of food. So please come and join us for the Janmashtami program next Saturday at 11 o'clock. Library will be open after class, and we'll conclude with our prayers.